Hi, this is Dr. Paul Sachs from Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. And today I'd like to review a recent revision to the Department of Health and Human Services HIV treatment guidelines. The DHHS guidelines, in reviewing the recent approval of bictegravir FTC-TAF, decided to add this to its list of recommended regimens for most patients starting therapy. So this means that there are now 5 regimens that are recommended for initial therapy for most patients, all of them integrase-based. And they are, in addition to the one I've already mentioned, bictegravir FTC-TAF, they include dolutegravir, abacavir, lamivudine, dolutegravir, tenofovir FTC, elvitegravir, cobicistat, tenofovir FTC, and raltegravir plus tenofovir FTC. So 5 regimens are listed, but I think many of us in clinical practice already think that there really are 2 that are better than the other 3. And those 3 are the dolutegravir plus tenofovir alafenamide, or TAF FTC regimen, a 2-pill regimen, and the previously mentioned bictegravir FTC TAF single tablet regimen. So why are these 2 the ones I think are the best? Now, remember, I'm not speaking on behalf of the guidelines. I'm speaking on behalf of my opinion. And I'll tell you that I think they're the best for the following reasons. First, the raltegravir and elvitegravir options, if a treatment failure occurs, then resistance to the integrase inhibitors and to the NRTIs can occur. So this higher resistance barrier of the dolutegravir and bictegravir treatments is a real advantage. So far, in clinical trials of triple drug therapy with dolutegravir and with bictegravir, there has not yet been a case of treatment-emergent resistance. Second, the elvitegravir regimen contains cobicistat. And cobicistat, of course, as a PK booster, has a significant number of drug-drug interactions. And as a result, clinicians have to be very careful not to be prescribing concomitant medications that may interact. All of us who have been doing this for a while have had patients with significant drug interactions, some of them potentially very serious. So that's another disadvantage of the elvitegravir choice. The abacavir regimen, abacavir, lamivudine, dolutegravir, well, I would say that recently the abacavir cardiovascular risk data got stronger from data that we heard presented at CROI. And in addition, abacavir requires pretreatment HLA-B5701 testing, does not treat hepatitis B. And among the single tablet options, abacavir, lamivudine, dolutegravir is quite a bit the largest. Another problem with some of the other regimens is raltegravir, remember, is 2 pills, so it can't be co-formulated. And then the last thing is just to look at the NRTI choices again. The tenofovir alafenamide option versus tenofovir diazoxide fumarate option does appear to be safer from a renal and bone perspective. So that leaves us with these 2 regimens, TAF FTC plus dolutegravir and TAF FTC bictegravir. I think both of them are very good choices. Which one you choose in clinical practice kind of depends on how you view two different issues. The first issue is whether a single pill option is required or better for your patient, and then I think the bictegravir FTC-TAF option is preferred. The other is how you view the importance of long-term clinical trials data and clinical practice data, real-world clinical practice data, and then the dolutegravir plus TAF FTC option is preferred. I think over time we'll see whether one of these 2 emerges as better than the other, but right now they're very, very similar in all clinical trials outcomes and likely to be similar in real-world outcomes as well, although that remains to be seen with bictegravir. So before I leave the DHHS guidelines, I do want to mention one other thing. The DHHS guidelines have had Dr. Martin Hirsch, or Marty Hirsch, as overseeing them for many, many years. And Marty has done an exceptional job. And I think it comes down to 2 skills that he has. One is that he is really superb at establishing consensus when there are divergent opinions in the room. And having been on the DHHS guidelines in the past, I can tell you that sometimes is the case. People don't always agree. And Marty is great at hearing these differing views and coming to some sort of consensus. That's one thing. And the other is that he's an exceptionally good editor. That gigantic document is read in toto by Marty, who looks at every word and every sentence and tries to make it read as good as as perfectly as they can, and he does a terrific job. So Marty has decided not to run for re-election in this important position of overseeing the DHHS guidelines. I gather he has better things to do, but I want to thank him for the great work he's done on them over the years, and hope that he at least provides some informal advice to the guidelines going forward. So that's a review of the recent revision of the DHHS guidelines, as well as a thank you to Dr. Martin Hirsch. Thanks for listening.